Today's program was brought to you by Roth, Wisconsin, makers of the world's best cheese and pioneers in the U.S. artisan cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thank you. Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz, sitting here with Peter Meehan, editorial director, co-founder of Lucky Peach. And the last time you were on the show, we were in Brooklyn, and now we are in L.A.
Now we're in Los Angeles.
Which is appropriate because we are here on the release party of the Lucky Peach L.A. issue. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Came out today.
Yeah.
And first city you focused on for a whole issue.
Yeah, this is the first destination-specific issue of the magazine.
Now, as a former New Yorker, now L.A. person myself, I'm sure I can answer the question, but no one's tuning in to hear me speak. So what made you decide to, one, put the same dedication that you would put into, you know, issues that you've dedicated to pho and, like, specific foods to a city, and two, why L.A.?
Well, I mean, I think that it's, you know, this is the 21st issue of the magazine. So
it's legal now.
Yeah, exactly. It's fully, you can buy pornography and alcohol and serve in the armed forces. But it was, you know, we're always looking for new ways to approach the editorial, and destination issues are a pretty classic trope of food magazines. And we... You know, we flirted with, like, let's move the whole staff to Sydney for a month.
Sure.
That really doesn't work in our current economic model. And and as we sorted through places to go, I'm like, LA is a place I've been coming for 15 years pretty regularly, and in the past few years, more and more spending time here. And I was just like, there's so much there. It's my favorite place to come and eat. So it seemed like a logical place. It was basically just about getting what I wanted.
Yeah, I mean,
it was an excuse to hang out.
Isn't that the greatest thing about starting something, where you go like, I want to be there.
I want to go hang out with my
honey,
friends.
Honey, I wish I wasn't going back to LA so much. But the magazine, she goes, didn't you pick the topic? You're like, right. I gotta go. I gotta get the Golden Deli.
For like the research and reporting part of it, it's more plausible than tonight, which is a launch party, which, you know, it's hard to be like, honey, I have to go have a party in Los Angeles for our magazine. But this is, you know, this is the burden I bear.
It's the job that you picked that no one else could show. Now, you know, as New Yorkers, because I think I'll probably always consider myself, even though I'm from Philadelphia, I think I had 10 years in New York, I get to say
sure,
a New Yorker. I feel like the misconceptions that I had not only slipped away about L.A., but I like outright defend things. Like, I don't mind driving. I'll just say. So, like, what are the misconceptions that people still have about L.A., and what were some of people's reactions when you're like, for those people who had them, that when you were going to do a whole issue in L.A.?
I mean, I think the thing is that there is driving, and there is smog, and there are all sorts of things that you could find to criticize about L.A., but I can't imagine that there's not an analogous set of complaints that could be lodged against any major metropolitan area.
I mean, have you ever sat on the train or gone over the Williamsburg Bridge?
Like, right, it's equally been stuck in the train. Yeah, I mean, it can be, you know, at least in L.A., you're in your car, your Uber, and you're controlling that environment. But I think it was less about, you know, and I think we didn't spend a lot of time in the issue confronting, you know, people's expectations about L.A. It was more about just trying to shine a light on all the things in L.A. that are so exciting to us right now. And that was really more of the focus of it.
Now, personally, you came out here 15 years ago, right?
Yeah.
What do you remember as your dining experiences and navigation of the culinary scene back then?
I mean, it was before I was I was into food, but it was before I was, like, professionally into food. And I stayed, my wife and I stayed at her aunt's house in Studio City, and ended up going out in Sushi Gulch a lot, and going to Asanebo and Nozawa and places like that, because they were around the corner from where we were.
Sure.
So I had all my earliest mind-blowing sushi experiences here. And then, you know, coupled that with, like, thinking that we could go to Hollywood and the beach in Santa Monica at the same time, because it was pre-Google Maps, and I just remember, like, intense fights on, like, the 10.
Oh, my God.
Because we didn't know what we were doing traffic-wise.
I mean, that's the biggest thing, and to talk a little bit about what you talk about, the idea of, like, it's not so much a melting pot, but a mezze platter in L.A., and I think part of that is the distance. Like, there's no encroachment of one neighborhood to another, because it's such a pain in the ass of driving where New York, Chinatown has swallowed up Little Italy. Yeah. And I think because of that, and you talk about that in L.A., you know, you say L.A. is people an issue. And if you could talk a little bit about, like, your understanding of neighborhoods and how over the years, as food culture has become more come to the front, like, the very distinction of these neighborhoods and how that's affected the culinary scene here.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, I owe the large part of my understanding of Los Angeles to Jonathan Gold, who's...
I'm sorry, who? He's up-and-comer?
A local food critic. Okay. He writes for a small paper here, but I think he's going to make a break at some point.
Watch for him? One to watch?
One to watch. But Jonathan is someone who I honestly feel like I've eaten more meals with outside of people in my nuclear family in the last 4 years than anyone else. And he... You know, he's such a great explainer of what neighborhoods are and how they came to be. And learning to see L.A. through his eyes taught me, I think, a lot about how I saw L.A. And it was through people like Bricia Wellizetta. Like, that was, you know, she's this incredible force. It's this incredible restaurant. But it's an Oaxacan restaurant in Koreatown.
Sure.
Like, you know, I don't think that I have a deep enough knowledge of the city to fully resolve all the potential like intellectual problems I would have with explaining why you're going to go get Oaxacan food in Koreatown at a 300-seat restaurant and it's going to be amazing. But it was like getting connected with like these little points of light around the city, and that was, you know, really I thought the best thing that we could do was say that, you know, LA has all of these different people living their bringing their lives here and then reflecting it back out in the city. And I think that's what makes it so exciting, because the Thai restaurants are by Thai people for, you know, for a Thai community, but anyone can go and access that. And I think that the fact that everything is at least 20 minutes away means that, unlike New York, where you really do have to, you know, you're gonna, if you live in Manhattan or if you live in, like, you know, like the part of Brooklyn close to Manhattan, you're gonna have to really make a concerted effort to go out and find people, you know, immigrant communities who have restaurants and eat in them. As we're here, you're always crisscrossing something that's always available to you, and that's a really exciting thing, I think, for an eater in a city.
I mean, would you consider, you know, so much of New York's original culinary scene at the turn of the century is like an immigrant story, you know, and that immigrant story is Eastern Europe and that part of the world. Would you, one, consider LA's food scene here partially an immigrant story? And then, two, is it more of, like, Latin America, Asia, than it is the European influence that you see in New York?
Yeah, I mean, that's a point that Bourdain made when I interviewed him for this issue and attributed to Roy Choi, but that the backbone of L.A. cuisine is Asian and Latino and predominantly Mexican. And I think that that's a different backbone that exists in New York. I also think that, you know, like you mentioned, with neighborhoods encroaching, the gentrification of New York is, I think, squeezing out smaller businesses.
Sure.
It's putting pressure on the ability of people to open small places that I don't see reflected here in Los Angeles. And I think that that's a major difference between the two. And, you know, I used to write the 25 and under column. Mm-hmm. For the times, like, I like the food that often gets me the most excited is, like, are small mom and pop places doing food from where they're from. But one of the misconceptions I had about Los Angeles that I was cured of in the last year is that the high end food here was bad, because I'd been to a number of, like, expensive dumb restaurants in Los Angeles. And I would say you have a lot of expensive and dumb restaurants in Los Angeles, but you also have people doing incredibly smart, innovative, fantastic things. Like, Providence like the least interesting restaurant in the world to me. And then I went, and it was fantastic. And I remember, like, flipping through, I mean, I was, like, you know, flipping through pictures of every course on my phone. And, like, the next day I'm like, we didn't have a bad, every course was better than the one before it. It was hard to, you know.
It's hard, yeah. And you, let me make the argument. I think there's a lot of terrible restaurants in New York that are super expensive.
Yes.
But because there's so many filters and food writers, because you have so many champions, those restaurants never make it through the crack. Like, I couldn't name half the Midtown restaurants that are full every night. And I'm not talking Times Square. I'm talking about, like, the power broker, like the fancy high-end ones that are open and gone.
You and I have never been power brokers, so we don't know them.
Yeah, yeah. But in LA, it's like the fine dining, in many ways, the cream rises in a certain way. You know, your Providence, your Redbird, you know, Chispaca,
yeah.
Tuamek, because those are also being done by the people that we, that you work with. I mean, they're in, you feature many of these people in the article. And I think you see fine dining down here in a new, because it is the West, right?
Right.
I mean, can you talk a little bit about seeing the LA versus New York, and just specifically LA, as either being like reactive or active as trends, especially with, you know, what's going on in the culinary national?
I mean, I guess that's the thing, is I'm just, and I love New York, and I'll probably live there for a long time, but the number of places I'm like super excited to go and eat at in New York is way lower right now than it is, you know, what's happening in,
sure.
in restaurants in Los Angeles. I think that there's, you know, and I think that there was a character, there's a easy characterization of like LA restaurants being kind of, you know, that same thing that you were saying about Midtown restaurants, that there's this vacant agents and, you know, starlets eating at dumb restaurants, but that's, you know, and I'm sure that there are hundreds of those here, but the places like Nancy Silverton's restaurants,
yeah.
or Ludo's restaurants are really personal expressions of someone's idea of food, and I think that that's, you know, like when you get to that sort of more high-end, ambitious, expensive restaurant, that's the thing that I always want to see, is like the indelible fingerprint of the chef running it. And I just think that there are so many places that are doing that here, and that continues down to like the restaurants in the San Gabriel Valley. I mean, those people are just as serious about their food and what they're doing and their vision, and I think that there's just a really strong community of restaurateurs here, which is why we had to put a whole issue around it.
It's interesting because one of the trends that actually made it from LA to New York was started in the San Gabriel Valley, which was the Giant Dumpling.
The Giant Dumpling. I remember Jonathan took me to a place, and he told me, he said they were, it was a place that had Wuxi-style soup dumplings. And yeah, and I still don't, I don't think I could find Wuxi on a map in China, but yeah. That was the first place I had the giant soup dumpling. But yeah, I mean, that trend's there, you know, like Walter Green, our former graphic designer, who now has a column called Taste Test, that's like one of the most delightful things to happen to Lucky Peach, went around, and he's a huge fan of, like, let's say chicken nuggets, and
yeah.
We sent him to only like consume green juice for a few days, and like,
oh my God,
reported on that trend.
You know, it's funny, and that's and we'll touch on that before we get to the musical break, but that's the big lead article, right? And it's funny because going back to what we talked about earlier about conception, is like, oh yeah, everyone juices in LA. And it's funny because what originally people thought as juicing in LA has now become co-opted and just been a business where some are good or some are bad. But it's just like, even the people working there that you come across the article, like, no one really wants to drink juice all the time.
I mean, it's a, yeah, and I like that, like, yeah, and then the juice is transforming into this, like, holistic self-healing thing.
Sure.
Like mushroom powders and, you know, like the whole slogans on drinks, you know, like the cafe gratitudization of things.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess for me, I'm less interested about, is it a trend? Is it coming? Is it going? Than just like getting to document all of that stuff happening right now against a backdrop of like great mole and like cool, you know, Mexican French fusion just makes it like, if anything, just want the issue to paint a picture of the city as it is right now.
Yeah, I won't lie. I mean, I'll mess around with some smoothie juice.
I mean, I had turmeric tonics at Squirrel this morning. I'm, you know,
yeah.
Guilty.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take a musical break. We're going to talk about some more of the kingmakers in L.A., street tacos, and just what makes the city tick as far as the... Is it the new culinary giant? You know what? We'll wait. We'll wait. Yeah, so here's a live musical performance from a previous episode on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Have you tasted the world's best cheese? Grand Cru Sauchois is the 2016 World Cheese Champion. Our partners at Roth, Wisconsin make this gorgeous alpine-style cheese in the rolling hills of Greene County, Wisconsin. Grand Cru Sauchois is produced by hand in Swiss copper vats and finished by aging on spruce planks. The quality milk and careful craftsmanship bring out the award-winning light floral notes, nutty undertones, a hint of fruitiness, and a mellow finish. Perfect with Riesling and Muscat, Grand Cru Sauchois is a guaranteed hit for any occasion. Check out their other offerings at rothcheese.com. You'll discover Buttermilk Blue and their newest release, Prairie Sunset, the golden-hued love child of Mimolet and Gouda. You'll also find recipes like the Raclette Reuben and tomato tartlets. Everything you need to know about the world's best cheese is at rothcheese.com.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are coming to you live from Segovia Room at Ace Hotel, just minutes away from the launch debut party of Lucky Peach. Fully legal, issue number 21, LA issue. We're sitting with editorial director and founder Peter Meehan. Now, obviously, you can't write an issue in LA without talking about John, Vinny, and Luda.
I'm surprised how many times they had to come up in the issue, but they're doing so many good things. It's hard to keep them out of frame.
I mean, Animal is the first. Well, actually, Providence as well, but Providence was more of the. I remember like Sam Taylor back in the day being like, "There's this legendary high-end restaurant," but Animal was the first restaurant that I heard about in LA that I was like, "I need to get to LA and eat there," and it's still kicking and it's still.
Doing great stuff.
But, you know, the approach that John and Vinny have in bringing in Ludo and recognizing, you know, like working with Sarah and Sarah over Matt Capra, you know, what has allowed them and what have you seen for them to have so much of their finger on the pulse in L.A.? And how are they helping to tell the story of what's going on here?
I mean, I think the thing that's maybe special about those guys is the generosity of spirit that they have as restaurateurs, because I think that that's an unusual quality for, you know, for empire builders to have. And I think that the fact that they saw that they wanted to bring other talent into the fold of their operations, because they were building a little empire and then suddenly adding Ludo and whatever they're doing with Sarah and Sarah, like, that's a really unusual strategy for a restaurateur to pursue. So I think that that's part of it. And I think that there's also, I remember meeting those guys and just being like, and hearing about Animal and being like, who are these guys? And then meeting them and having them being so self-effacing and nice. And I mean, they just walked in upstairs to cook some food for the party, like carrying their own equipment.
I mean, literally carrying their own equipment.
Like, you know, and they're big enough to come in and swoop in when everything's set up later. But I think that they're lifers. I mean, I think that they're doing this because this is what they have to do. And I think that that's a quality that when a restaurateur has is like indispensable to long-term success.
I mean, so Animal's like about 7 years old. And I would say that's when everyone, around that time, when people from outside of LA started to really put an eye on that. Are they sort of the personification of, like, the evolvement of LA and what it's had to do to grow and to become its own city on a national, international level?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're great standard bearers for it. I think Roy Choi's a great standard bearer for it.
Arguably the founder of the biggest food trend in a paradigm shift.
Yeah,
in America, if not the world,
and I think Nancy Silverton is like, you know, an incredible, incredible, incredible talent who's done so many things to change food in LA and America over the years, and often without, you know, the recognition that would attend that success maybe in other cities. So, I mean, I don't think that there's any one person that I would pin it on. I would say that it is, you know. Citywide, there are just so many people doing cool, innovative things and really inhabiting what they do, and that's, you know.
I mean, the story and in the article that you read about Nancy is amazing because, you know, growing up on the East Coast and having a Jewish deli and and the idea that good bread is everywhere, the fact that until she was like, I'm actually going to put good bread in LA, is amazing. Like, she's the one who said, you can have good bread and sunshine 365 days a year.
Yeah, I mean, she revolutionized pastry in America. I remember interviewing Claudia Fleming years ago, who really changed the pastry scene in New York at Gramercy Tavern, mm-hmm. but she called Nancy Silverton to try to get a job and asked her what her favorite dessert was, and Nancy said a ripe peach. And Claudia couldn't understand it at the time, but it was that one phrase that sent her on the journey that got her into seasonal desserts that changed desserts in New York. And so she changed desserts, and then she changed bread, and now with, like, Kiesbacher and the whole, like, matzo corner, like, I mean, that's a
power corner.
Yeah.
Because you got that, and then you just go over the street, and there's Petit Trois.
Yeah, you've got the whole, like, little Ludo thing across the street. I mean, that's a, but I mean, I think Nancy, you know, Mozza and Osteria Mozza and Kiesbacher are all individually important restaurants in Los Angeles for different reasons. And so, you know, I think you've got that. I think you've got, you know, what Jazz Sing-a-Song did at Jitlada and putting a face on Thai food.
Sure.
You know, I mean, and like a crazy, exuberant, brightly colored glasses, insane Instagram that you should totally follow if you
don't. Oh, yeah. His gram game is, you know, very good.
But that's another important, you know, contribution of Russian church in LA. So to me, it's, and that's why we tried to feature people from all over the city, because it's that patchwork quilt that makes the eating here so great.
I mean, part of what makes the eating so great, and part of what Nancy's talking about at Fresh Pete's, is the farmers markets. I mean, one could argue that the Santa Monica farm market is the best farm market in America, if not one of the best in the world. And so many times I heard the argument in New York, it's like, well, if we had great produce like that, we could do it. And I've now realized, like, you will never have that greater produce.
No. And I remember a certain ornery chef friend of mine being like, restaurants in LA should be better than they are because the produce is so great. But I think, you know, I think that's what, you know, you've seen. I mean, what happens at Giusta?
Yeah.
Like, that food is so, I mean, there's technique, there's great flavors, but that's very simple food that's exalting what's coming into the market here, and in an accessible, like, great, fun space. I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a lot of that happening. And Gillian Ferguson's Guide to the Santa Monica Farmers Market,
awesome.
I think, is a great thing for when I used to come and go to the farmers market here, and it's so gigantic, you have no idea how to make sense of it. So it's like knowing that there's these 10 or 12 farmers that you should go and check out and get things from. To me, that was like something, you know, that's again like just the greed of being an editor, but being like, can you tell me where to go so when I go there next time I have a good experience?
I mean, what do you normally, what's your go-to when you go to the Santa Monica farmers market?
I mean, I've only been 4 or 5 times over the years because I'm also traveling. I don't have a kitchen, and I, you know, can't carry half of anything.
So mostly like fruit and produce.
Right, yeah, it's like a lot of citrus and jams and stuff. But I'm excited to try to go tomorrow morning and try to go tomorrow morning and use some of Jillian's racks.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when I was in between my last two jobs, my number one thing was like, I'm going to go to the market, I'm going to get stuff to make jam, and I'm going to get stuff to make dinner for my wife. Because I was like, this is, if you live here for more than a year, you don't somehow make it to that Wednesday farmer's market, it feels a little ridiculous.
No, it's a great one. And I mean, the Hollywood Farm, there are many great farmer's markets in LA, but, you know, I think picking that one to focus on, because when you do go as an out-of-towner, it's just mind-blowing the diversity and the size and the quality that's available there.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a fantastic issue. There's
Thank
so
you.
Much good stuff in it. And I just have to ask, can we just say that right now, I'm not saying for all time, that LA as a city is the most exciting, most forward-thinking culinary city in America?
Yeah. I mean, I mean, that's the reason to put an issue around it. But
sure.
I don't, you know, and I mean, I don't eat widely enough, you know, and I could be wrong, and Buffalo could be killing it right now. But 2 years ago when I went, it didn't seem to be giving Los Angeles a run for its money.
Yeah, the beef on whack wasn't...
Beef on whack, you know, it's good. It's good. But
it's like beef on whack wings and then 3 gallons of water. But I mean, it's like, at what point are you can... I don't know if you can deny it. Even be, you know, and you're staking it. Your first issue, there's so many cities, so many relationships you have with cities all over the world.
No, and I think it's really exciting. I think the other thing is that I think that superlatives are an attractive device for framing how we feel about things, like saying it's the best food city. But I think more importantly, it's especially given our current political status, like looking at
California's looking very good right now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're blue state people, you know. But I think like looking at the example of this city and all of these communities and how they like interconnect and intertwine and exist next to each other, like that's really where it's at. And I think, you know, I think Jonathan Gold is part of the reason that LA is such a good food city, because he's been such a tireless and omnivorous advocate for all of the good that is here. And I think that that's where, you know, like that's the thing for all other cities, is to go and eat widely and know what's there and celebrate, you know, everything that's around.
Yeah. And obviously, knowing your past as a restaurant critic and things like that, and reading the New York Times, there's a certain romanticism that he allows himself, and I don't know if it's because it's the Wild West and like that, that New Yorkers don't always, like, week to week when he writes, it's just like, even the bad spots are like, oh, that's, I could see myself going there. And he adds a sort of like surrealism to it that just allows it, like, behind any corner, down any street, in any strip mall, you can find like the next best restaurant.
And he's proven over and again that it is true. But I think that spirit of curiosity and that generosity that he brings to the way he writes about restaurants, really attempting to understand them on their own terms, is, you know, has been incredibly informative of my approach of trying to write about food. And I do think is a material contribution to the quality of restaurants in Los Angeles.
Absolutely. And the issue itself is 100% a love letter to the city, and makes anyone who picks it up want to read it. Now, the last thing I want to touch on, because it you answered a question that has driven me crazy for every year from here, which is the fact that I can drive around town and see the word pastrami and burrito on the same sign. And it wasn't until, and I don't want to spoil it because it's such a great, it's the answer to the question, but like, you know, growing up in the East Coast, which I think I've mentioned a million times in this interview alone, but like, the pastrami and corned beef are like a very holy, hard to work with type of.
There's a very missionary approach to how you're going to.
Yes,
to,
it's very much, to, you do pastrami today, you do this, and you can get it at these places in New York and Montreal. That's about it. But it seems so ubiquitous here, and I had no idea about how it even got to these, like, you know, hamburger stands.
Right, like the ubiquity of pastrami is just another meat option here. But I think that story that Chris Ying wrote about that is a, you know, it's another example that predates Roy Choi putting kimchi in tacos, or, you know, Ludo and John and Vinny doing Mexican French. It's like Los Angeles has long been a city where these kind of melting pot dishes happen, and getting to, like, you know, excavate that one little story of it was, you know, we won't spoil it.
I don't want to spoil it because it was one of those things where I wasn't expecting it, but it's like you get to the end of a great book and there's like that epilogue and you go like, oh, you did, it's all tied up nice and neatly. Well, Peter, I won't keep you anymore from the party. I really appreciate it. Where can people go to get the issue?
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, it's in your bookstores, it's in your small bookstores, your big bookstores, it's in your online retailers named after large jungles, it's at luckypeach.com, and
you won't say it, but I will. Lucky Peach makes an excellent gift for the holiday season. Just ask her mom.
My COO will be so happy that you just said that.
Yeah.
I'm going to report it to her immediately. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, well, thank you so much. We have another musical break, a special performance from Hands, one of our favorite LA bands that had performed earlier live on Snacky Tunes. And shout out to the Taste Awards, who nominated us today for Best Podcast and Best Radio Show. please go to tasteawards.com, vote for us. We'll be there, win or lose. And the award ceremony is in L.A., so...
Vote multiple times like you didn't in the election.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have enough time. It's funny, we did an episode that we recorded before the election where we talked about the election before it played, and then I went back and listened, and I felt like that needed a disclaimer. But what can you do? We'll go drown our sorrows in whiskey and tacos upstairs, right?
Cool.
All right, thanks so much. Stick around. More live music and conversation here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, that was just computer magic.
She's so amazing. I can't believe she's 21.
She's 22.
22. Her, she's amazing.
And you should check out the video for Running, which is directed by a good buddy, Johnny McSwain.
Wait, I thought the link you sent me was just like the song on YouTube.
There's a video.
Oh, Johnny McSwain, I love. Have you dyed his hair blonde?
I've seen his new coif. He has said that it is upping his game on both sides of the territories, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. He dyed his, it's like platinum blonde.
And and the things are, he's like a tall, thin, well-dressed man. And,
I know.
Was that an imitation of his laugh?
That was an imitation.
Oh, okay. So, in studio.
And I gotta say, the best pun food tattoos.
Oh, yeah.
It says salami. And she's dressed up as like a hooker, and it says, "I'm not a pizza meat." Yeah. So we got hands in the studio,
yeah. and we also have our good buddy Paul Tau, who's playing that, and our
hi,
and our good buddy Matt Goldman, which makes this the most LA edition of.
And can we say what's up to Nikki, even though she's not here?
Oh yeah, where's Nikki?
Having dinner.
Boring.
What?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
All right, whatever. So hands was introduced to me. By Paul, actually, at South by Southwest. He was like, come see my friend Sean's band. And I was like, oh, all right. I'm like, cool, whatever.
Hold on, but you know, year in, year out, South by and CMJ, Paul's the most impeccable taste of all bands.
Right. Keep eating. So,
was that moonshine?
Yeah, was that moonshine? The whole band has now tried original moonshine. And we've all got the sweats
on. What are you guys think? Good?
Yeah,
go right.
I'm sweating.
It's something else.
It's strong. I'm growing.
No.
It's really easy to drink.
That might be the problem. But it was afternoon showcase, and I loved it. And then I pretty much harassed Sean. Be like,
this year's showcase?
Yeah, this year's showcase. It was, I don't remember. It was like that, some random bar. Do you remember what the name of the bar was? Like afternoon show?
No. It was
The other show.
It was a tropical one because it was a Hit City USA party.
Yeah.
Headhunters.
Oh
my god, Headhunters. You know, Headhunters is like predominantly like a really cheesy metal bar.
Not that afternoon. It was predominantly
such great
awesome.
Bands like Austin's favorite Oklahomos have played there.
A crowd.
It gets real.
It gets real. So and then since then I was like, we should really try and get this band.
Who wants some sweetbreads?
Yeah,
dig on in, people.
Sweetbreads are thyroids from which animal?
The
thymus gland from the. It's like usually like veal sweetbreads, like it's like a calf.
And Hand steps up to the mic with the correct answer.
Oh my god! Yeah, these are delicious.
trying to conduct interviews here.
So Hand, let's talk to you about what you're
anyway,
all about.
So. These guys got him from LA.
You met them. And
no, they
you're
got him
awesome.
from LA today. Correct.
Indeed.
No, we got here
from Florida.
Yeah. Oh, so have you been on the road?
kind of. We've been on some roads.
We've been in the air.
Hard hitting questions.
Yeah,
we're in the air.
Oh, so it seems like you've been away from home. Are you on tour?
No.
What was in Florida?
We played DeLuna Festival.
What is that?
It's a festival on the beach.
Yeah, it was just music fest.
It's the
sandals only.
Sandals only.
No shoes, no shirts.
Right.
No shoes, no shirts.
Yeah.
It's the panhandle, so, yeah.
Was it good? Played? Yeah. Oh, you said Wallpaper played, right?
Yeah.
Who's on their way?
Right.
Well,
Ricky Reed?
Ricky Reed.
All right, so talk to us about Hands. How'd you guys form? How'd you guys meet? What are you all about?
Okay, so Ryan and I, this is Jeffrey from Hands. I sing.
Welcome.
And other stuff. Ryan and I went to high school together in Princeton, New Jersey about a million years ago.
Record exchange, right?
And yeah, thank you, P-Rex, up in the fucking house.
Thank you.
So then we moved out to Los Angeles.
Whatever.
Yes! Yeah, this guy's got incredible education up here. Then we moved to Los Angeles because we hated Philadelphia.
You guys go to the Terrace Club back in the day?
No.
Was that before you, Princeton University? Whatever, some rock coalition there. Anyway. Scene points.
Right? Yeah, okay. That's at least 11 points. Then we moved to Los Angeles and did nothing for a couple years except maybe scored a couple films and wrote some acoustic crap.
You scored films?
Scored a couple bays.
Yeah.
What films?
Scored a couple film bays.
We did a documentary actually about the extinction of redheads.
Gingers?
Gingers.
Is that like a real documentary?
Yeah, well, it was a friend of ours did it as a grad student at USC.
That sounds like a bad South Park episode.
It was great. Yeah. It was a good South Park episode.
Is it true?
It is kind of true, actually.
What's
does it take two gingers to make a ginger?
It doesn't, but it helps. It definitely helps.
Matt Goldman adding color commentary.
No. I'm glad.
So wait a second. I have to imagine the deal with redheaded gingers. Like, what is it like to score a film? Because not a lot of people get to do that. That's a pretty insane thing.
Yeah, I mean, the other actual film we did was an independent called Less that was directed by a guy named Gabriel Diamond, who's kind of tight in the crew of, what's her name? She did Me and You and Everyone We Know. Okay. Miranda July. Yeah, it was...
Oh, what's that genre called? Sweatercore?
Yeah, exactly. Sweatercore. Fucking weirdo core.
I'm, no, I'm serious. That's the name of the genre. It's called Sweatercore.
Yeah, and it sounds about right. It's very posh-y. Yeah, and it was interesting.
It's funny because no one watches the movie because they're just looking at their feet. Anyway.
Do you have sound effects? Wait, here it comes. Throw it on, Jack. This episode is not going to be bought.
That's not what I was looking for.
Yeah, maybe we should have started with it. So, you're scoring films.
So, yeah, we did Less. It was a blast. We got to pretend that we knew what we were doing.
How'd it turn out?
It turned out good. I mean, we actually premiered at the Sunset Lemley like this past year.
Oh,
it was pretty cool.
Yeah,
so that's no small thing.
No, it was cool. They actually
and they ended
for
up
this
using
festival. It was a music festival that they premiered it with. Yeah, film festival. I'm sorry. And they contacted us like 3 days before the festival and asked if they could use the trailer music for the entire festival. So our music for the film ended up being the theme song of the whole
That's amazing.
Film festival. It was a really, when he sent that email, I was just like, wow. Like,
isn't that a good moment awesome. When you're like, I think we did something good, and everyone's like, we love what you've done.
Yes.
And, you know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
it's just nice to be like, we're going to do this thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we believe in it, and then people are like, we love what you've done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we loved the guys. I mean, from the get-go, it was kind of like, we dug their aesthetic, the film seemed pretty cool, and we were totally down.
So you're in LA, scoring films, scoring babes. And how'd the band come about?
Okay, so fast forward a couple years. We have a good friend, Xander, who plays in a extremely good band, Pepper Rabbit. If you don't know them, check them out.
Pepper Rabbit?
Pepper Rabbit.
Okay.
Yeah. Another rabbit band.
Is it one R in the Pepper and the Rabbit share?
No. Okay. No, it's just straight old Pepper Rabbit. Salty Bunny.
Traditional.
And
it's a traditional non-R sharing band.
He's like, you know, good friends with many an LA musician, specifically a band called Local Natives.
Oh, big fan of Local Natives.
Shout out to Ryan and crew.
They're all
who
super nice.
Ryan et al., who we met through Matt this summer.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're the nicest guys.
Small world after all, am I right?
We ended up at a party, I think, somewhere, and I met Sean, our drummer, and then 2 weeks later at a Local Natives party, like, handed him a demo and was like, yo, if you like this, let's hang out and jam. We met Alex on Craigslist. Nice. Yes.
Were you just,
that's right.
Okay.
That's right.
What was the post?
Yeah.
Please.
Looking
foot
for
massages.
Looking for somebody with liberal foot massages.
Two tickets to Local Natives show, free, topless.
Right. Exactly. We basically just wanted a human, like, horse that we could ride around.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so, no, actually, we were looking for a bassist, and somehow, the first bassist who walked through our door, thanks to Mr. Craig and his list, was this guy over here.
Can I tell you something?
Alex Staniloff.
I met Craig.
Oh, my God.
I met Craig at this weird, this is back, like, when Money Silk existed for events, and there was some weird party in Midtown. I met Craig. Totally non-descriptive Jewish dude. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Millionaire.
Why don't we get a song?
Yeah, let's get a song.
Let's get a song.
What, you know that story?
No, the story was really good. It was almost as good as the shootout from earlier today.
Hey, I met Craig.
I mean, he's a real person. It's, you know. Anyway, all right. Play a song.
And his name's Craig. Can we?
No,
it's actually Craig.
Like someone's like, hey, this is Craig, and they went
from Craigslist.
Alright, so we're gonna play a song. What's the first song we got up?
Warm Night Home?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's gonna be Warm Night Home. We actually just released this as a single last week, so
is this an exclusive?
Download the internet.
Download the internet. No. On such blogs as All of Them and Hype Machine.
Right, exactly.
.com. Okay, all right, so here we go. Live with Sucky Tunes.
Awesome. Woo!
It's quite chatty in here.
I wish that that air conditioner...
I mean, no, dude, that AC can't combat that whiskey.
Moonshine. Yeah, no, there's nothing done about that.
So talk to us about what the LA scene is like these days. How you guys, you know, we know a lot about the New York scene.
Hard-hitting questions.
Yeah. East Side.
Yeah.
East Side?
East Side.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know much about the LA scene.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, we moved to LA, like I said, 4 years ago, Ryan and I, and... had no idea really what, you know, getting into venues, or we just didn't know what we were doing. And it turns out all the venues basically are on the east side, save a few. And the few that aren't are, like, you know, kind of bigger. Troubadour, Palladium, stuff like that on the west side of LA.
Favorite place to play?
Favorite place to play. I'd have to say...
I actually
feel like that was one of my favorite shows was back in November with Naked and Famous at School Night. That was
Famous this weekend. They're amazing.
That was a really special night.
I just need to say really quickly, that sounded like the band said that, and the band did not say Matt said that.
Yeah.
Joke, because Matt does that.
Matt Goldman, adding color, best color guy in the biz.
Goldman's going to shut up now, and the band can respond to their own questions.
Can I say, I wish I had more pizza? I mean, there's some beer left. I think all the moonshine's gone.
Is the moonshine gone?
No, there's a little cuppy.
Oh, no, dude, what's going on right there? Is that bottle empty?
That bottle, I think Hans decimated it.
We did not. No,
you know,
I mean,
I probably don't need more than the three.
I mean, you are so. I mean, can I get a, like, how red is he?
Yeah, I was gonna say you're glowing. Actually, you are Rudolph's nose.
So all right, so hold on. Can I say?
Stop.
Best late night taco place in LA.
Late night.
Oh, good. That's hard. I'm gonna go to Sean on that. We're deferring.
Matt says not hard. Hans.
I mean, I don't know.
Let's see. Let's go to the board. What do you got?
I think we could all answer tacos. El Flamin' Taco.
What's the order? It's like 2 a.m. You just played a show. You're wasted. You're tired.
El Flamin' Taco.
No, but what's the order? What are you ordering?
I never remember.
The jam.
That is actually the correct answer.
Yeah. Let's go to the board. Cannot remember order. That's 100 people. Yeah. What do you order?
It's about their El Pastor. They do like... They do legit El Pastor with the, you know, like the meat on the spit, and they carve it off. It's good.
I love it when someone's like a little crusty, like a little burn, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what else is late night eating? What do we got going on in LA? I mean, Pink's is sort of...
Yeah.
It's not good. I don't know why this
What else? What do we got? What's the late night food spot?
You know, what's sad is there aren't all that many. I end up... Sadly, at like fast food,
I do drunk.
Like In and Out,
I do Thai.
Yeah, you know,
Thai or
Korean.
Yeah,
they close at 2. You know,
Thai or Korean.
Yeah, Thai or Korean. Yeah. There's a faux place near us that's not good, but they're open 24
hours.
Oh,
the faux show.
It's faux city, but they are faux show. Not that good. Yeah.
What about during the day? We're just chugging along here.
It's not good.
You know, I'm a big fan of Park's Barbecue, the Korean barbecue.
Oh, yeah. He actually had a party catered by them.
It's pretty...
No, that was...
Yeah, the Korean barbecue place.
That was my 26th. Yeah.
I mean, that's right. I feel like
what
that's...
What did they provide for you?
That's what it was.
Bulgogi?
Bulgogi, yeah.
Pork belly.
Yes.
Do they provide all those, like, really fun little kimchi things?
Oh, yeah. Whatever you want. They got it all.
Hold on a second. Let's switch this up. So I saw you guys in South by
Southwest.
What do
you mean? This is a great food banter.
No, it's a great food banter. I saw you guys South by Southwest. You guys are out here. It's weird to say this, and like I don't want to like fan weird. Out.
Do
I'm,
it.
Not in the fan out, but like you guys seem to like be growing with each month that I've seen you guys. You get a lot of support from Matt Goldman providing color commentary.
I know that
here.
Guy.
MFG.
Paul Tao and everything. So it's like, how do you feel that entering into CMJ? Is this your first CMJ?
Yeah.
Yes.
How do you guys feel entering into it?
Lucky.
Do you feel that you could be the darlings of CMJ this year?
I would love to do that. Yeah. Quite honestly, I mean, it's hard.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I'm 2 drinks away from crying. So let's talk about real things.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. No, you know, I mean, it would be idiotic for me to say that we make music with the intention of being anything but like, you know, something people really care about.
And that's
just the way it is.
I can say this as like an outside observer. Paul brought me to see you guys. I know Matt has you know had you guys booking, and I keep seeing you guys around. So it's like kind of like if there was like a you know a GOP type of situation of running
GOP.
For like you know the running parties. Like there's a bunch of candidates for the mm-hmm. darling. Hans is with me.
Yeah,
you are off on a moonshine.
Hey, we're
like the Herman Cain.
Yeah.
No.
More so like the.
Would you rather be the Romney or the Bachman?
Or the Herman Cain.
That's an unfair question.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know, man.
But I'm just saying, like, I mean, it's an interesting thing. It's like heading into your first CMJ. You guys have a lot of stuff behind you. It's like, how do you feel about it?
I am very. I'm very interested to see how it goes. I'll say that. I mean, we, you know, played twice yesterday in Florida, had an absolute blast, and hopefully all of our shows go better and better and better.
I heard both Mickey and Donald came out of those shows.
Yes, this is true.
Let's play another song. Yeah, let's play another song. You heard...
Don't even say I'm cut off. Don't even say. I got squash at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. I'm going to sweat all out.
We got another song coming up from Hans. What is this song called?
This is actually a song called Brave Motion that we've never played acoustic, so I hope you enjoy it.
Snacky Tunes exclusive. Bow, 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 bow.
Air horn.
Stop short at a bus stop.
That never happened before.
No.
We never did that.
Yeah, we've never played that song acoustic before, now.
Awesome. Hey, so Snaggy Tunes exclusive.
Yeah.
What is it called again? Exclusive.
Brave Motion.
Shut up. Look, that's the moonshine.
Yeah.
So we are running low here on questions.
No, we're running great.
And patter, but let's open it up.
No, I got a question. So going into your first CMJ, it's always interesting to think of your mindset. Like, can you be real? Can you be moonshine real?
Yes.
Like, how do you guys really feel? Honestly,
can we be moonshine real?
No, I know, but like
no,
like,
but we're getting moonshine real right
no,
now.
Let's get moonshine real. Like, okay. Like, how do you, like, honestly, like, what do you guys think about? Like, what's going on with this? Like, are you scared? Are you happy?
I will tell you right now, personally, on a percentage basis, like, 90% of me is completely petrified.
Okay.
And 10% of me is like, this better be fucking awesome. So,
but you already did South by Southwest.
Yeah,
how is CMJ any different?
Okay,
I was petrified there too. Honestly, it's not like an unnatural fear or anything. I just want to do really well, and I think that we all are in that boat together. That's like what my most. That's what I like about these guys is I feel like we all really want to do well, and we're never ever ever like Yeah, that was great. That was perfect.
I think that this is, for me personally, this is a very surreal experience, because if you asked me a year ago if I thought I was going to be flying to Florida and then taking a red-eye flight to New York the next day to have a week full of shows, I would have told you you were lying, and that wouldn't happen to me. So this is, it's a very surreal experience, and I feel very lucky to be in this room right now. You know, it's a very, very fulfilling experience.
And, I mean, you guys should feel confident enough to enjoy it.
I agree.
Oh, yeah. No, we're enjoying it.
I mean, you got to enjoy the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the healthy fear is actually what makes my... For me, as a performer, that's where I, like, that's where I live.
I mean, I think that's a good point to bring it to a wrap.
Yeah, should we do one more song?
Yeah, but let's get all the necessaries out of the way.
Nothing so, if I'm on the what book...
The or, what book?
What do I find?
You're on the My Face?
My book?
My Face.
Twitter book. My Face. So I'm surfing MyFace, okay?
Yes.
How do we find you guys?
And what do I download on MyFace?
Yeah. Okay.
Just let me just say, Hands.
I know.
Not the most Google. It's not.
It's not.
Name.
Have you ever wikied Hands? Because there's a hell of a lot of information on your hands.
Yeah, let me ask you, as a band that is un-Googleable and unwikiable, was it a concert decision, or where did the name come from?
I'm sorry, that sounds a little slurred. can I ask you a question? What is your favorite fact about Hands?
My favorite fact about Hands. I honestly think my favorite fact might be that we met our bassist on Craigslist. No, I don't know why.
I actually meant like...
Oh, Hands. Yeah. Hands. Oh, everything that we've accomplished as like a society, it's all there. The hands, man.
And how do you feel about people who use their feet as hands?
Fucking idiots. I don't know. What are you doing? Like,
never forget. Never forget. Oh, whatever. Never forget Hands.
No,
is
I think
holding his face right now.
No. All right, let's get the Twitter website.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yes. We're everything's Hands Sounds. HANDSSOUNDS. And Twitter.com/HandSounds.
What are the shows?
MySpace website.
EP is mastered.
It's mastered, and I think we're gonna do a release hopefully early next year. But we did just put a single out. I think I already.
And the single is called.
Spat that out. It's called Warm Night Home.
Which you can find on the internet.
You can find it on the internet.
And what shows? Give us all the deets.
This week, we have a ton of shows.
Tomorrow being playing, the best one.
Yeah, tomorrow, school night, Matt Goldman.
Let's give a shout-out to Matt Goldman.
Yeah, seriously.
How rad is Matt Goldman?
Oh, God. I don't think there are enough numbers.
There's not enough adjectives before rad.
There's synonyms for rad.
Can we announce that? Can you guys talk about what we're doing together at the end of December?
Oh, yeah, we're throwing New Year's Eve together at the Ace Hotel.
Awesome. I thought it was still pending. That's good to hear.
Oh, I mean, did I just show my? It's
confirmed.
Pending.
Confirmed.
Oh shit!
And also, unbeknownst to me, Matt Goldman has a clothing line out. Did you guys know this?
Chambers.
Are you serious?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we're.
We actually went and played that Mesa thing with Chambers. Yeah.
What type of clothing?
Devin.
Adult diapers. Fantastic.
Adult contemporary.
Adult contemporary diaper. Now, what type of clothing do you have?
It's like a full, button downs, jackets, jeans, shirts. I make the t-shirts. I make the marketing.
Can you dress us? What's up?
I would love to dress
can
us.
Can Snacky Tunes be the
Let me say this.
Radio
I still
show?
Haven't figured out exactly when the boxes get delivered because they don't come to my office. And by the time I know, they're like, oh, we have to ship it. We'd have none. And they all look really good. Like, they have nice clothes on all the time.
Oh.
So I think that they just take it. My partners.
Is the website NN36 Chambers?
It's chambersclothing.net.
Can we talk for Hands?
Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang.
Yes.
Wait, can we talk for a second?
Cream.
All I heard was a red light going off and it said, mention website.
Can we just talk for a second about Wugazi? Have you guys heard about this?
Yes.
Oh, the mashup.
Yeah.
It's Wu-Tang and Fugazi.
That's amazing.
Playing at Fun Fest, which we're going to be at.
Wait.
It's Wugazi.
It's not original members of...
No, it's all new members of Fugazi and Wu-Tang. It's none of the people from
this. It's not the people.
Okay, yeah, I was
I'm so pissed.
Get me to Fun Fest.
Everyone's like, we're booking tickets now.
It's one guy who took Fugazi songs and Wu-Tang songs.
Oh, it's not members of Wu-Tang or Fugazi?
It's Ian McCry.
McCry.
all Dirty Custard.
all right.
Everyone remembers.
Yeah, the Wizza. He was that black Wizard of Oz. Anyway.
Anyway, all right. So I'm going to get one more song on hand.
Fugazi, right?
That's weird. Fugazi is one of my all-time favorite bands.
It must be one of those
things.
Like, when I heard it, I was like, what drugs were you on when you thought this would be perfect together?
It was good enough to get booked at Fun Fest.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, the proof is in the paper.
All right. That sound means that we're ready to play up. What are you going to play us on? What's the name of the song?
Okay, this one's called Force Fascination.
We're not leaving.
Forced.
Yeah, we're hearing a lot
Dude,
of
Dude, we still have wallpaper left. They're coming. No. Dude, no. Okay, so you're going to end the segment. We're going to have some more moonshine.
I really hope our parents don't listen to this episode.
Dear Mom and Dad. Yeah. Hey, Jack, just put...
If anything, they're going to understand.
Just Jack, just put Dear Mom and Dad, don't listen to this episode in the beginning.
It's a title.
Okay, so Hands, Possible Darlings of CMJ, Handsome as Shit. Well, we want to thank everybody for a very special CMJ edition of Snacky Tunes. Big shout out to Original Moonshine, Matt Goldman, Paul Tao, and Hands. Unfortunately, wallpaper got caught up at the airport and we're not able to make it on the show despite all the promises and boasts that we made and trying to have it all and do it all. But we will hopefully get them on sometime in the future.
Please tune in next week for another edition of Snacky Tunes.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.